Good morning, everybody who is dialed in to this regular ISB meeting of April 2020. This is Hans Hoegevors, the chair of the ISB. You cannot see me at this moment because I have, at this moment, poor internet connection, so I am audio only. And this only goes to show that these are far from normal times, and that these are pretty difficult times indeed, especially for many of the people and the companies who are having to deal with this very unusual situation. We as ISB are doing our best to monitor any possible COVID-19 issues, and we are providing assistance where we can. You know that we have, or you may know that we have provided educational material on IFRS 9 and on IFRS 16. And indeed, last Friday, we had an unusual supplementary board meeting, which we had to have because we proposed practical relief in accounting for rent concessions arising from COVID-19. And the reason why we had to have this extra meeting was that we are going to provide a very short comment period of 14 days, which is necessary to make the adjustments as quickly as possible. So that is why we had to step in and have a meeting much more quickly than normal. We have also provided extensions to deadlines. To give stakeholders more time to respond to our proposals. So we try to be as sensitive as possible to the difficulties you are all experiencing. At the same time, we would like to make progress where it still can, and some issues are very urgent, such as the IBOR reform. And it's also urgent that all the amendments for IFRS 17, which will only be effective in 2023, but that those amendments are in place so that people can continue implementing. So we are trying to strike the right balance between business as usual as possible, but taking into account all the problems that you are experiencing, and we indeed, as an organization ourselves, are also experiencing. In this week, we seek to make some progress in projects in line with the revised timeline, the revised timeline, such as we discussed last Friday. And we will also try to make progress in other projects to the extent that they don't require stakeholder input at this stage. So this allows us to keep moving forward without burdening stakeholders. Having said this, I hand over to Sue, who you will be able to see because she has clearly a better internet connection. She will lead the discussions, and we're going to start with management commentary. Sue, I hand over to you.
Thanks, Hans. Tempting my internet connection as you speak. And with that, I'm going to swiftly hand over to Julia, who's going to introduce the management commentary papers.
Thank you very much, Sue. So I will start with a quick introduction before we move to specific papers. So just to remind you, in December 2019, we completed our initial round of discussions with the Management Commentary Consultative Group. In March, the board discussed the objective of management commentary, and in particular, how that objective is different from the objective of financial statements. The board decided that the specific role of management commentary is to help investors and creditors better understand information included in the financial statements and also provide insights into the future. The board also discussed individual disclosure objectives for the main areas of content in management commentary, but didn't make any decisions at that meeting. Those disclosure objectives were also discussed at the March CMAC meeting, and we incorporated the input we received from CMAC in the papers for today's discussion. Each of the papers also provides, in an appendix, an overview of the input we received from Management Commentary Consultative Group and a discussion of how we address this input in our work. So at this meeting, we would like to discuss guidance on business model, strategy, and resources and relationships. Before we introduce those topics, I'd like to explain the overall design of the papers and the design of the disclosure objectives. At this meeting, we ask the board for decisions on the disclosure objectives and on the key items that must be addressed in management commentaries. That is, what are the key features of a business model, key aspects of strategy, and key resources and relationships. We do not ask the board for decisions on other aspects of possible support and guidance to be included in the revised practice statement, but we invite questions and comments on that guidance. We plan to continue working on the support and guidance as the project progresses. And in particular, we will look to establish the right balance between clear principles, but also sufficient amount of detail to help preparers identify information that is useful to investors. Now, talking about disclosure objectives for individual areas of content, just to remind you that they are designed to support all dimensions of the overall objective for management commentary, and also to provide a link between that overall objective and supported guidance in each area of content. This is illustrated in Figure 1 in Agenda Paper 15A. And those individual disclosure objectives for the main areas of content play two roles. First, they are designed to help preparers identify information to be included in management commentary, and also to help assurers and regulators assess whether management commentary meets its overall objective. So, to achieve those goals, disclosure objectives must be based on clear principles, focus on investor information needs, and contain sufficient amount of detail. Accordingly, the disclosure objectives developed by the staff follow a consistent structure and include three components: the headline objective that sets out the main principle, the assessments that investors typically make in relation to the area of content, and the type of information that must be included in management commentary to help investors make those assessments. We think that this latter component would be particularly helpful for updating taxonomy as well. So the structure of the disclosure objectives, alongside our recommendations for each area of content for today's discussion, are set out in Appendix A in the cover paper to help you see the big picture. And subject to today's board discussion, we plan to follow this consistent structure in future papers and to populate that appendix as the project progresses. At the next meeting, we expect to discuss with you two more areas of content, operating environment and risks. And in addition, we will follow up on today's discussion if necessary. Before we move on to business model, do you have any questions on or comments on the overall design or next steps?
Can't see anybody with their hand up, so I think you, sorry, Tom. Can't hear you, Tom.
Just first a question on impacts. My understanding of reading the impacts part is impacts refer to external stakeholders. Is that correct?
Tom, I'm not sure I understand the context of your question. Are you talking about business model paper?
Yes. You refer to impacts.
We're still on the cover paper at the moment, so.
Firstly,
we just wanted to see if anybody had any questions on the overall package of papers before we then move on to the individual papers. I don't think so. Yulia?
So I hand over to Yelena.
Uh, Thank you, Yulia, and good morning, everybody. So we are now moving on to agenda paper 15B on business model. And this is not our first discussion on business model. The board already discussed the findings of our research on business model and what is meant by business model in October and November 2019. And paragraph 6-9 provide a summary of those discussions. Today's paper focuses on disclosure objective for business model and a possible guidance supporting that disclosure objective. The disclosure objective, as Yulia noted, we've been developing those disclosure objectives to include three main parts: the headline objective, the assessments that investors and creditors make in relation to the area of content, and the types of information that must be included in management commentary to help investors make those assessments. And in developing our recommendation for the headline objective for business model, we went back to the findings of our research on business model, discussions with the consultative group, as well as our review of other standard setters' guidance and recent publications on business model indicated that business model is often used to discuss how an entity creates value or how it makes money and generates revenues or returns. And different stakeholders place different emphasis on value creation and generating cash flows. Some prefer focusing on value creation because they perceive it as better conveying the longer-term view. Others, including users of financial statements, prefer to link business model to cash flows because they perceive references to value as vague. They point out that it is important to understand how value is monetized and reflected in financial statements, regardless of whether those cash flows are to be reinvested in the business or to be distributed to shareholders. And in particular, the need to focus on cash flows has been emphasized by many members of CIMEC at our recent discussion with them. In our previous papers on business model and on the objective of management commentary, we already explained that the notions of value creation and cash flow generation are closely related. And the board broadly agreed that the revised practice statement should explain that the notion of value that the entity creates for itself and for its investors and creditors reflects the entity's ability to generate positive net cash inflows after taking into consideration not only the amount of those cash flows, but also their timing and uncertainty. And this discussion will be included in the guidance supporting the overall objective of management commentary. In terms of business model, we think that it is important for investors and creditors to understand both how the entity's business model creates value and how it converts that value into cash flows. Therefore, we recommend that the headline disclosure objective for business model should be to provide information and analysis to help investors understand how the entity's business model creates value and how it converts that value into cash flows. Next, we sought to identify particular assessments that investors and creditors typically make using information about an entity's business model. Firstly, our research of investors and creditors' needs confirmed by our recent discussion with CMAC, has shown that investors and creditors want to understand what makes the entity different from competitors and what the entity depends on for its success. That helps someone assess how good the entity's business model is, that is, whether the entity's business model is effective in creating value, in particular relative to the entity's peers, and whether it is effective in converting that value into revenues and cash flows reflected in financial statements. Feedback from CMAC also suggests that investors and creditors assess whether the entity's business model has the potential to grow. If the entity's operation can be scaled up, that could be a source of further value creation and cash flows generation. And so the assessment of scalability of the entity's operation can give investors and creditors an insight into the entity's prospects. Another important consideration for investors and creditors is whether the entity's business model can continue creating value and generating cash flows, both in normal circumstances and when circumstances change. Often, this is referred to as sustainability of a business model, but because the sustainability is interpreted very differently by different parties, we wanted to capture specific aspects that investors and creditors want to understand. That is how durable, resilient, and adaptable the entity's business model is. Next, in paragraphs 38 to 43, we have considered the main types of information and analysis that investors and creditors would need for their assessments. We recommend that the revised practice statement requires that information and analysis of business model shall cover, first, the range, nature, and scale of the entity's operations. In simple terms, this would help investors and creditors understand what the entity does. Second, the entity's cycle for creating value and generating cash flows. And that cycle would cover the components of business model that the board tentatively confirmed in November 2019, that is, inputs, processes, and outputs. Third, the description would cover possible effects of the entity's operations other than in outputs, that is, the wider impacts of the entity's operations. And in November 2019, you tentatively decided that such impacts would need to be described only if they may affect the entity's ability to generate cash flows in the future. The staff also recommend that this information and analysis and management commentary should focus on the key features of the business model. This is because one of the main gaps in the reporting practice that we've heard about is that entities' business model descriptions are often generic and lack focus on features that are important for the entities. So in the next section of the paper, we'll discuss what guidance could be provided in the revised practice statement to help preparers identify those key features. On page 17, we'll provide staff recommendation on the disclosure objective for business model, covering the headline objective, main assessments typically made by investors and creditors, and types of information that need to be provided in management commentary about the entity's business model. We'd now like to hand over to the board and ask whether you agree with this recommendation.
Thank you, Elena. Who wants to come in? Nick?
Thank you, Sue, and many thanks to the team. I think we're making really good progress here with this set of papers, some really good tangible work over the last few weeks. So first of all, looking back at the objective and paragraph five, I guess, you talked about some of the language issues that we already have around whether this is about the generation of cash flows or whether it's about creating value. I would say my take on CMAC is that it's actually a little more nuanced. I think there are some CMAC members who do have very strong views that this should be all about the generation of cash flows, and others who actually would be more proponents of value creation. I know I made this point last month, but I do think we just have to be very careful here that actually generating cash flow per se will not always generate value for shareholders. And so as you described it earlier on, this needs to be actually around the issues of both timing and dealing with uncertainty to, I guess, put those issues around the cash flows in terms of making them one and the same as value creation. So I think we can deal with that in terms of a drafting issue and how we express that. But the second reservation I have, particularly about paragraph 5A, is around the word converts, in that it, to me, that gives me a gut feeling of short-termism. And it's really about, it's the message it sends to me is about converting those cash flows into things that can be distributed to providers of capital, whether that be shareholders or lenders or other creditors. And I think a very important aspect in terms of thinking about the model that a number of CMAC members again refer to is capital allocation. And indeed, what I feel we're missing out here from this definition is a sort of the sense of the reinvestment opportunity. And because I'm left, as I read it today, I'm left with something that it's about converting that business model into cash flows. And actually, for me, it's more dynamic than that. It's about, yes, converting to cash flows, but then thinking about what to do with those cash flows. And so I would almost add onto that description, you know, understand how the entity's business model creates value and converts that value into cash flows that can either be distributed to the providers of capital or redeployed in the business or reinvested in the business, whatever words they are, because that's such an important dynamic of the business model. And that's why people are asking about capital allocation. It's that reinvestment opportunity. And I don't really, as I say, that my takeaway from that first description in paragraph 5A, it feels it's about just converting into cash. It feels a little bit short term to me. It almost feels like a liquidation scenario, which is clearly the ultimate kind of, you know, we've got to really wrap this up. So I would ask that we just really think about that element there. I think Tom was referring to this a moment ago. We look at the description around impacts in this paragraph. I just struggle with that language. I know what you're getting at. I'm not quite sure we've got the right words. I know where we try to use impacts to avoid using other words. I just struggle with that sentence generally. The one thing I really do like, and it's in paragraph 36, where we now have the language around durability, resilience, and adaptability. And I think that's very good language. And I wanted to congratulate the staff on that. I know we're trying to avoid using the word sustainable there, and I think it works. But say my main concern is still to have we really captured this sense of reinvestment when we use the word converts. I'm not sure that we have.
Okay, Hans?
Yes, I am one. I would like to thank the staff for the general quality of the papers. It's really good. I also feel that you're getting a firm grip on these on all the proposals that need to be done. I actually found the solution that you found for the relationship between value creation and cash flows, sort of describing value creation as a precursor to cash flows. I found that elegant, and I think it captures exactly what we are trying to say. I don't disagree at all with what Nick said. And if somewhere you can explain that when you're talking about converting value into cash flows, that you don't mean dividend distribution necessarily, but you can also mean reinvestment in the company. I think you can put that somewhere, but the danger of adding too much nuance is that it gets too lengthy and ununderstandable. So that's a question of how to write it. But I really like the underlying thoughts. If you can improve it a little bit, do so. But I'm happy with this.
Thanks, Hans. Jing Chao and then Tom.
Thank you. As Nick and Hans said, that I also acknowledge that this is a very good paper. Why I say that, actually the paper tried to address all of the issues we received and find a solution to resolve those issues. I appreciate that, particularly that, as Nick said, that some stakeholders mentioned value creation is very important. Some mentioned that cash flow generation is very important. And the staff tried to find a solution, bring both in the disclosure objective, and try to build a clear link between value creation and cash flow generation. But as Nick said, that whether the wording convert, people seem to may have different understanding. So when I first look at this wording, I have similar feeling that. So I'm thinking whether can using generation or generate cash flow, very neutral word, something like that. But I appreciate the staff try to bring both together and try to build a clear linkage between value creation and cash flow generation. I think both information very useful for investors and creditors. Secondly, I think Nick also talked about a little bit about the sustainability of business model. I appreciate that staff decided not to use the wording, this term of sustainability of business model. But we are still trying to capture the idea of sustainability business model. But I'm thinking whether it's really, you know, reflect the real economics, because under current fast-changing environment. There's still always new technology come out, new demand come out. So it seems that whether if for investors and you know, creditors to assess whether a business model is good or not, really depends on that business model is sustainable or not. I think maybe in real economics, in reality, it's not the case, because sometimes investors will look at whether you are sufficiently adaptable to the reality, to the faster changing environment. So I'm happy that currently we capture the adaptability and the resilience as a part of assessment of business model. But I'm cautious on using the term durability. I'm not sure that, I think in reality, it's very difficult to maintain, a business model long time because of the new technology, because of new resources, because of new demand. Business model always evolving, always changing. That is, if I'm an investor, particularly those high technology companies, I will make adjustment. Whether those business model can adapt it to find the faster changing environment. And that is more important than sustainability. So this is, I think, one comment I would like to make, whether, we really would like to keep durability as the first characteristic to make a judgment whether business model is good or not. Thank you.
Justin Chow, Tom and then Chang Wu. Tom?
Yeah, can you see me, Sue?
Yep, and I can hear you.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Yeah, I was, but somebody said I couldn't be seen. I have a couple of comments, but also a question. First, I'm a little bit sympathetic to Nick's concern with the word convert. On the other hand, in the blue box at the bottom of paragraph 28 is a nice succinct thing, and I'm pretty happy with it. But if there was a better word than convert, it just made me think about what Nick said. Then I had a question about impact. And when you say impact, it seems to me that impact is sort of impacts or outcomes on stakeholders other than, say, the shareholders and creditors. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So when we go to write that, because when I read the paper, that becomes more obvious in later paragraphs where you use the term. And so when you write the final document, I think that needs to be really clear. And then occasionally people need to be reminded of it, because I was sort of having a little trouble with that. Also on impact, one of the impacts, and I want to make sure that, is it just included with all the other impacts or is it sort of set aside, is for every entity that provides goods or services, a primary impact is on their direct customers. And, when you talk about creating value for the shareholders and stuff, that you need to have that one. And so when you do impacts, are you going to isolate that one or will it be kind of in there with the other impacts?
We were not planning to isolate any of the impacts, I suppose, in great detail. But what you're talking about in terms of of customers, we are trying to capture that a bit later in the guidance on describing outputs, because there we are talking about customers, about a value proposition. So that aspect of creating value for customers, we think, will be captured by our guidance.
Okay, so anyway, again, it's a place I think when you go to write up, that particular impact seems to me to be, it's a necessary one. All the other impacts, in fact, some of them are negative and tangential, that's a necessary one. And then just on the word sustainable, I think it would be, I noticed we use sustaining in strategy, so we're okay with it there. And I'm okay if you don't use it for business model, but I think durability, resilience, and adaptability are facets of some form of sustainability. And I still think you may need an overarching term to when you go to structure this, that you still are really looking at sustain, you know, the ability of the business model to recreate itself and to continue on. And whatever term you use, I still think you do need kind of an overarching term. It doesn't have to be sustainability view concerns, although it's certainly widely accepted in the strategy literature. And maybe it's good that you split them, because you're splitting business model and strategy, and maybe that's one of the ways you could do it. That's it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. So just so you know and you can relax, it's going to be Chung Wu next, then Gary, Tadao, and Mary.
Thank you. This is a really well written paper and comprehensive paper. Just one question on that value creation. Is this valuation objective also related to other content areas, for example, strategy or some other, you know, resource and relationships? It just appears in the model of business model, in the content of business model?
I think it is fair to say that all content elements are related, and this theme of value creation and cash flow generation, or the ability to generate cash flows, will appear again in strategy. It appears again in resources and relationships, and we suspect it will appear in other content elements as well. So it is a theme flowing through management commentary.
Okay, then after our discussion of question one, which I agree with your recommendation there, are you going to revise all the same disclosure objective part of paper A, B, or D, C, D, you know? You are going to revise them all?
We think that it does work a bit differently in different areas of content. And I think when we come to discussing strategy and resources and relationships, we'll flag those aspects, why we chose to, for example, talk about ability to generate cash flows in the strategy paper and in the disclosure objective for strategy.
Okay, then please discuss question issue with the staff in a meeting to how to apply this idea for other areas of this whole model, please.
Maybe, Steve, okay. I could just quickly add to this. I just want to emphasize what Yelena just said, that there is a consistent principle or a consistent theme flowing through all the content elements, and it's all about value creation and ability to generate cash flows over the long term, whether those cash flows are redeployed or distributed. But it's a matter of emphasis and almost a matter of drafting, if you will. So in some in a particular context, it might be clearer if we refer back to business model, for example, in resources and relationship, rather than referring all the way back to the underlying principle. So the principle is the same, but the emphasis, for the sake of clarity, is a little bit different in different places. But we can come back to it when we discuss further papers.
Okay, thanks, Julia. Gary?
Thank you and good morning. Before I get into some specific comments, I just want to say I think this is a superb set of papers and really pulled this whole notion together, you know, through all the papers today. And I can see it coming together in the end product, or at least the exposure draft. A few comments, and maybe it all gets resolved in drafting, but we talk about, I absolutely love the link of value creation and how does it become cash flows, because I kind of look at the world and some very high profile companies, massive market multiples and values that have never generated $1 of cash flow. And I mean, that I don't think that's a great model. You know, if you're a trader, the venture capitalist who's seeded the money, but our focus in this is the entity and not the traders per se. So when I think of value creation coming to how does it get to be cash flows, I think, Yulia, you just said it, is I think of that as an intermediate or longer term concept. I know this paper and other papers later on get into short, intermediate, longer term things, but in the short term, you can always generate cash flow if you've got any sort of a value of a company or any sort of a balance sheet, some outside of the business model. You can securitize receivables, you can sit on payables, but that's only good for so long. And within the business model, you can generate cash flows. If you're a big consumer products company, you could eliminate advertising spending for a year or two. That would be a diversion from your business model. If you're a technology company, you could eliminate R&D. Very long-term problems for the organization in terms of longer-term cash flows. But in the short term, there's always opportunities to generate some cash flows. And I think that's more of an MD&A capital resource discussion than it really is, the longer term storyboard that we're talking about here. So I think we need to separate those two. I do like when we get up to paragraph 36, using durability, resilience, and adaptability. To me, you add them together, it really is sustainability. But sustainability as a word means so many things to so many people. I think we should try to avoid it as best as we can in the document. I don't think you can totally ignore it, but I think this is a better way to express it. Again, just to be repetitive, there's just so many ways sustainability is used in practice. And then lastly, and Nick hit on this too, I think it's important to have a discussion. Okay, what do you do with these cash flows, whether it's deploy it, dividend it, invest it, or whatever? And again, maybe that goes in the strategy section. Maybe I know we'll have a separate section on capital and allocation and so on. I don't think it's important, but I do think it's important to what do you do with this cash when you've got it? Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Tadal?
Thank you, Sue. Actually, when we discuss first, thank you for the staff for the paper. It's very, very good one, very comprehensive. It's a very difficult area to deal with in such level of details. When we did the research on investors, we refer to in paragraph 10b to key inputs and how they are maintained or enhanced. I think that is a bit related to all the discussion we are having here. It's just because we said that this was carried out on the business model research, and I do believe that these are actually related to research and relationship, and I believe mm-hmm. that is dealt with there. Another point here, it's a key revenue and profit driver is still in this paragraph. I tried to find a link between this, what the investor want to see, and where exactly in the paper we are dealing with this key revenue and profit driver. That's something that I at least I wasn't able to find this directly. And one point that was also raised by Tony and everybody, impact of entities operation. I fully agree that sometimes it's not because it's just there on actually the question on the specific disclosure objectives. When we say the impact of the entities operations could affect the entity's ability to generate cash flows. When I look at paragraph 68, it gives some examples in terms of water and development of some literacy in a region, whatever. And I think that Tom referred to the impact on stakeholders. I'm just wondering whether actually when we say entities operation impact is even broader. I mean, that it's definitely talking about environment, society. I mean, that it's community, it might be broader than simply the, I'm not sure whether the stakeholders capture everything. And I do believe that we should work on the wording when drafting. That's it.
Okay, Mary?
Thanks. If I have some comments on, again, like others, how we express this. And going back to some of Nick's comments when he kicked us off, well, before that, let me join the crowd that is supporting your efforts to avoid the use of the word sustainability. I think that is appropriate when desirable when we're talking about the high-level information. I think sustainability does not have to be a word that is banned from the management commentary entirely, but I think it does come with so much baggage that we would be better off using other words as you have done in this draft, and then you know, we can make the link in some of the later discussion about with sustainability. Then going back to Nick's comments and his concern regarding the focus on cash flow sending too short-term a message, I think his ideas were helpful in terms of adding on to the generate, you know, convert to cash flows for distribution or reinvestment. And I think maybe even just that kind of shorthand without spelling out distribution to investors or reinvesting in the business, you know, it sends a bit of a balancing signal. An overall comment I have about the wording in the question one that follows paragraph 44 is I think I'd like to see a bit more of a link, even in at the level of the disclosure objectives and the information about that investors and creditors assess, a bit more linking back to the financial statements. And I'm not trying to drag you back into the past, but I think that for me, management commentary is context, is linkage, as well as providing all of this information about the business. And I think you had some helpful language in paragraph 34 and paragraph 38B, where you talked about generating revenues and converting to cash flows. And paragraph 38B, I think the language there was, the results of those operations are reflected in the entity's financial statements. I'm not trying to say grab that all in, but I don't want to see management commentary entirely divorced and free-floating from the financial statements. I think it is complementary and amplifying, but not totally divorced from it. And then echoing some of the comments of others, when I look at item C, particularly little 2 and little 3, the entity's cycle for creating value and the impacts on the entity's operations, it's every time I see those in the abstract, I struggle to understand what we're focused on. I think you need to pull more of the words that are in, for example, paragraph 56 about the entity's cycle and a few more words about the impact of the entity's operations to make this capture stand alone, because it's too abstract as it sits here, at least for me to get the points that we're trying to cover. But I think those are drafting, and it's just bringing a bit more specificity rather than disagreement with what you're looking at. That's it.
Thanks. Rika?
So thank you. Thank you for staff preparing a very comprehensive paper. The information included here is really helpful to think about the discussion. So in connection with Nick's and others' point about user word of the combat, I still think, your concept of the connecting between the value and cash flow is a really helpful idea. So I'm not sure how is the right solution to, fix some conceptual point, but I really want you to retain this idea and with a supportive explanation or something. And also about, I really think user element and factors of durability, resilience, and adaptability. Those are very good, well, used point instead of use of the sustainability. And but in the nuance of the durability, I might have a pretty different nuance from the Jin Chao mentioned. I think some business models or some part of the business model will still retain or should be durable or remain even after there is some changes, significant changes in the circumstance. So I'm not sure we really need to put something like mentioning about the significant change will impact the durability or not here. So that is the only point I thought about. Thank you.
Thanks, Rika. Françoise and then Anne.
Well, thank you. I mean, I have only a very few comments and they're all very supportive. First of all, others, I would like to express the congratulations to the team for this set of papers in particular very well reflect that the development of our guidance is very well on track. And I think it was not that easy to define the right approach, so wanted to mention that. And I wanted also, I'm supportive of the proposals here, and I'm sensitive to the comments that Nick has made on this extra bit of value creation. So I guess it's, and in a way, you, in our comments, you just referred to that as well. So I guess it has to find some place somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
Thanks, Sue. I would also like to commend the team for the papers. I found paper 15 helpful. So paper 15, appendix A, where you actually gave us a table and we could line up the text that we are now discussing in detail in that appendix A in the table. So this was page 4. And I found that really helpful. And I also reflect on Yulia's comment that she's made earlier in our discussion today, where she said there are consistent themes across the areas, but the emphasis can differ. So that was something that I had taken away from Appendix A, and I have found that really helpful in trying to understand how the things link together. Because at other times, the team has told us that there is connectivity between the areas. And so this building up this table helps us see that. So I just wanted to draw attention to that table as I think a very useful summary device. Now, the extent to which that table gets reflected in the consultation document, I'm sure the team will work on that. But something else I did notice in the papers was the diagrams. So the things that are called figure one or whatever. So the first one is 15, paper 15B on page 10. Figure one. I think those figures are also very helpful to identify the concepts we're dealing with and how they relate, the various parts of the concepts relate to each other. So I would encourage the team to keep those diagrams going and to put those diagrams into the consultation document. I think they're very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Martin and then Hans.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. And I agree with this overall objective, but I also understand it, okay, from a user, analyst, investor perspective that, okay, that they want really to understand the business model, how it creates value, and then how this value creation converts into cash flows. But I'm a little bit concerned that companies maybe don't know that in detail, or only not on a high level. Maybe some companies are sophisticated and have good concepts of value creation, but I'm a little bit concerned that not many companies maybe have a good understanding and kind of system methods how this value creation is then converted into cash flows. And I don't know when we
first start with this disclosure objective. What are the next steps? Mine in other projects, we then say, okay, if you, then we come up with a kind of more detailed disclosure requirements. But if this disclosure requirements not fulfills the disclosure objective, then we have a catch up all kind of requirements. And that is my only little bit concern, that maybe companies with all the integrated reporting stuff, maybe they have an idea, but really to have kind of concepts how value creation is then converted into cash flows, I'm a little bit hesitant that companies and all companies are so far and can really give that kind of disclosure, how that converts. I mean, if I look at electro companies now, which have a high, high value, but don't create any cash flows currently, but then to disclosing that, how that is then converted, I don't know if also big companies really can do that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Hans?
I would really be surprised if companies don't understand that ultimately cash plays a very important role and that, you know, you can invest and reinvest, but every company, I think, knows that in the end it has to translate into cash flow. So I would be surprised if they find that a problem. Coming back to this cash flow issue, we say in the conceptual framework that the purpose of our standards is to help investors assess future cash flows or something to that effect. When we wrote that down, we didn't think primarily about dividend or solely about dividend distribution. We know cash flows can be used for other things. So if, you know, I'm okay with spelling that out a bit more clearly, but if that leads to question marks, it should even lead to question marks in the conceptual framework. Perhaps it's the word convert that does, you know, cash conversion that gives this taste of, oh, we're now going to cash in and distribute. Perhaps if you replace conversion with transformation, is it perhaps a bit better, but I think these things can be resolved. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Martin, do you want to react to that?
Yeah, because my point was not that companies clearly have a good understanding maybe about their cash flows and their cash management and liquidity, all this kind of stuff, but this linkage, that is what I'm concerned. And I don't know if companies really, if you ask a company how you convert your value creation into cash flow, I don't know if many people have a good answer to that. Maybe they have a cash management and have an understanding of cash flows, but if that is linked to value creation, that was my concern.
Okay, I had a couple of things just trying to be additive to what's been mentioned before. The first one on question 1A, I think it's just wording, but I think about value and cash flow sometimes in the other direction. And the example that I use would be a startup company that has got expectations of generating cash in the future because of some great new product they're working on. They may create a lot of value in the sense of growing the value of the shareholders' equity, but the expectation of cash is a long way into the distance. And I don't think that in that case is value converting into cash. It's rather the expectation of cash that's creating value. But I think that's just a wording articulation issue. I second the comments that some have made about avoiding the use of the word sustainability. I like the way that you'd broken it down into durable, resilient, etc. The last point that I wanted to make was that I think that the paper covers a lot of good stuff and it's good in providing a lot of examples for companies about the types of information that might be relevant for their investors and sort of reflecting the fact that for different entities, different things will be important. But I think to make sure that the information doesn't just turn out to be a huge download of lots and lots and lots of information that sort of adds to the disclosure overload, it's going to be really important at every opportunity to reinforce that what we care about is the information that is relevant to this idea of value creation and cash flows. So, for example, if I look at question 1C, where at the end and it says that information and analysis should focus on the key features of the entity's business model, I'd always want to then link that back into, you know, this idea of value creation and cash flows. That's the key thing. It's what information do you need to understand about your operations, your structure or whatever, to really get your head around the background behind the value creation and the cash flows. It's not just describe your business model as a generic thing. It's for that purpose. And I think the more we emphasize that, the better chance we've got of meaningful information being provided. Okay. Are we ready to move forward in the paper now? Yep.
Can we just ask a word on question one?
So on question one, can I get, a show of hands first off, and then we'll check with others. So
is this sort of taking on board the general comments that have been made?
Of course.
Yes. It's going to have to be refined, but the general approach. Hans, do you support?
Yes. Yes.
Francoise?
Yes, I do.
Is there anybody else you can't see, Neely?
I can't see Anne and Mary.
Anne?
Oh, I'm sorry. I do see Anne.
Mary?
Yes, I support.
Okay.
And Mary? Don't count Mary because I'm not certain.
But, okay. Okay. So we'll do 13.
Sorry, one yes. After. Yes. No, I'm a yes. Okay. Sorry, I forgot about mute. Okay. I had my 14. Hand here.
Okay. All right. Moving on then. Yelena?
Okay, thank you. So now we move on to the guidance intended to help preparers meet the disclosure objective for business model. And we'll start with guidance intended to help preparers identify the key features of the entity's business model that the descriptions of the business model should focus on. And just to remind you how the notion of key features relate to materiality, last July, you already approved guidance on making materiality judgments in preparing management commentary. And that guidance applies to all information in management commentary. Key features of an entity's business model are those features, information about which is likely to be material for investors' and creditors' assessments of the entity's prospects of future cash flows and of stewardship. And in paragraphs 51 and 52, we discuss guidance that could help preparers identify those key features of business model. We think that the key features of the entity's business model should be identified based on the ideas underlying the headline disclosure objective for business model. That is, the revised practice statement should describe the key features of the entity's business model as those that underpin the entity's ability to create value and generate cash flows. In addition, in paragraph 52, we provide examples that could be included in the revised practice statement to help preparers identify those features. The examples include features that underpin the entity's value proposition or provide an entity with a competitive advantage. We also note that if the entity has more than one business model, management commentary would need to discuss the key features of each business model separately. So, question two asks the board whether you agree that the revised practice statement should specify that the key features of the entity's business model are those that underpin the entity's ability to create value and generate cash flows.
Any comments? Nick?
Thanks. Just very briefly, just one comment on paragraph 53. It's good to see that we acknowledge that an entity can have a number of different activities or different business models even. We also need to get a sense that of the entity's overall business model, and it may be that there's an interrelationship between its different activities. So on one hand, it could have a cash-generating business that's funding a cash-consuming business that would be part of the entity's overall business model. Thank you.
Anybody else, or can we vote on this question? I think we can vote. So on question two, can I get a show of hands? Okay, and people on the phone, Hans?
Agree.
Francoise?
Yes, I do.
Mary, did you have your hand up?
I do.
Yeah. And can you see Anne? Yes. Okay, so I think that's everyone, Neely. Okay, Yelena?
Right, thank you. So now we are moving to paragraphs 54 to 68 that provide further guidance on information that might be provided for each type of required information identified in the disclosure objective. First, we suggest guidance on describing the range, nature, and scale of business, the entity's operations. And notably here, preparers could discuss the entity's operating structure and the link with the entity's purpose if they choose to describe that purpose in management commentary. Second, here we provide guidance on describing the entity's cycle for creating value and generating cash flows. That is how to describe inputs, processes, and outputs. And here it is very important to note that there is a link between the entity's business model and resources and relationships that it relies on. Resources are used as inputs into the entity's business model, while relationships can play an important part throughout the cycle of creating value and generating cash flows for the entity. And the guidance on describing resources and relationships is described in Agenda Paper 15D, and we'll talk about it a bit later. And the last part of the guidance is about impacts of the entity's operations. And here we are saying that entities would need to cover both positive and negative impacts. And we again highlight that only those impacts that could affect the entity's ability to generate cash flows in the future would need to be covered in management commentary. So with this, in question three, we ask whether you have any questions or comments on this guidance.
Tadal?
Thank you, Sue. It's just that understanding, I can't clearly understand nature. I have some difficulties reading the text, just to and I was expecting to have this here because it's asked before in question one. What exactly the meaning of range? What exactly of kind of information we are expecting behind range, and I can guess something in relation to scale, although it's not actually in the text as well.
I think with the range, we're getting at this idea that entities can have different models, they can have different segments that generate value creation and cash flows in different patterns. So here we would expect entities to describe those different activities. And the scale, again, it is going back to providing the linkage with financial statements, how much of each of those types of operations, how that would be reflected in financial statements. So we would, so that users could get an idea sort of how big the impact of those activities is.
Jing Chao?
Thank you, Sue. Just one question about the entity's operation related information. When I look at those details, it seems to me that some of the information actually relevant to the segmental reporting information, such as entity's operating structure and the changes of those structures, something like that. And we also mentioned those segments and relevant information. So I want whether, because in the financial statement, those entities are also required to provide segmental reporting information. So there's some overlap there. So I think some clarification may be needed. First, the segments here will refer to whether it's consistent with the segments included in the financial statement. And secondly, if there is some overlap between two-part management commentary and financial statement, whether how can entity to deal with those overlap, I think, and what kind of relationship between two-part, I think it's better to clarify a little bit further, particularly if entities already provide detailed segment reporting information in the financial statement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. And I'm going to call on Gary, then Mary, then next. So, Gary?
Thank you. I really liked this section, and I'm really putting my old preparer's hat on, as I used to actually write some of the stuff in a former life, not anywhere near what we're talking here. But I think, and I can make this comment either now or in strategy, but I'll make it now. I think companies, to achieve what we're trying to accomplish here, are going to have some difficulty with it. Not a technical difficulty, I would probably characterize it as a willingness difficulty. Companies are very good about high level, what am I trying to do, what's my mission, what's my vision, and so on. And you tend to be very good in MD&As about short-term tactics. This is the in-between, where you get into some nitty-gritty details about what is your model, what is your purpose, and what is your strategy to do it. So we go into granular detail. The answers exist, you know, as I think as a general rule, whether you want to be this transparent and detailed in a public session is a different story. Like I say, it's easy to talk big picture. It's easy to talk grassroots tactics. It's the in-between I think we're talking about here. I think this pulls it together quite nicely in here. And I think, you know, companies, they give you a lot of short-term statistics, you know, but you could have a company that's market share keeps growing, which you'd say is a really good thing if you're investing in them. But if you're in a declining market, as players are dropping out, the last person standing has 100% market share. So you got to be careful about how you portray these things. And I think this is a very good approach to doing it. And I think what it's implied, it didn't come through here. We need balance. There's the good with the bad. The highly factual versus the more aspirational. And the more aspirational the discussion is, the more granular you need about what are the tactics and the strategies to achieve it, and so on. And so you can say, I really do like it. I think it gets away from vision and mission and actually gets it down to, I think, useful information for users and so on. And I don't think there's anywhere near enough of that in practice. And if there was, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion. But well done.
Thanks. Mary?
Just picking up on one thing in paragraph 67, I thought there was a very useful explanation of that notion from the beginning about the impacts of operations of the business model. If those impacts could affect the entity's ability to generate cash flows in the future. And I thought that amplification about affecting the entities, if those impacts affect the entity's ability to generate cash flows in the future, was a very important explanation of what we were aiming for there. So not only am I supportive of it in this context, but I'd suggest thinking about whether that gets moved up and incorporated into some of the higher level discussions to make that impact point come alive a bit more.
Thanks. Nick?
So just a brief comment on paragraph 54B, where you highlight information about the location of an entity's operations. One area that users often struggle with is to understand a broader exposure by geography or by currency that an entity might have. And it obviously it's multi-layered. It can be quite complex because it depends where your competitors are located. It depends on your input and your output currency exposure. It depends where your customers are located. But I just think, and this may be something that gets picked up in the risk section, I don't know, but it's just a flag. I think that is an area that users are often focused on to try and get beyond just the locations, but to understand the overall economics of geography and currency. Thank you.
My only observation in this section was sort of following on from what I said in the previous one, which is there's lots of good stuff here. I think our challenge will be providing examples of what could be relevant, but making it very clear only to provide the information about what really matters. So, you know, we don't want every entity talking about their legal structure, for example, and getting that balance right, I think, will be important. Anne, you want to come in?
Yes, one of the things I appreciated in this paper was going back and looking at the input, the processes, and the outputs section in terms of guidance. Right, because one of the things I think we're trying to do is to demonstrate to people how they might go about getting these good reporting and useful information as per the objectives. So when I'm thinking about the input, the processes, and the outputs, I was thinking about some research I was involved in that was to do with narrative reporting by people who were engaged in what they described as integrated reporting, so directly relevant to what we're talking about here. And it was all about people identifying what was material to disclose, so also very relevant to what we're talking about here. And what we found in this research that was across many companies in many countries, entities were very good about identifying material items, and they were very good about disclosing them, but not very good about describing the process by which they went about identifying them. So that was just for me, just emphasized here, that encouraging description of the process forms an important part in our guidance. So appreciated that part of the paper. Thank you.
Chang Wu and then Gary.
Thank you. Following the next comment on paragraph 54B, I guess, locations of foreign operations, just I wonder whether this area can cover country by country tax payments. Elena?
Well, we had a discussion about how to cover tax with the Management Commentary Consultative Group, and we are planning to cover it in future papers, but at the moment, I don't think we have a ready answer for that.
If I could just add to that, so I think where the location information would become relevant and material would be if there was an issue such as exposure to tax in a particular jurisdiction. So that issue in itself might create a situation where the information on location was material, and that's the thought process we're looking for preparers to work through.
All right, great, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Gary?
Yeah, thank you. A suggestion for the staff, and not so much for the paper, but for when you're doing some sort of outreach or talking to preparers, internally in big companies, the capital budgeting process would maybe be a good source for internal discussions similar to what we're talking here. And I'm not talking about, you know, the smaller stuff. I mean, the big time capital spending. Because you think of, when you used to do capital budgeting, when you think about it, it's got all the elements in here. You know, you've always got more requests for capital than you've got money to spend. So you start making decisions. And all these things we're talking about in this project, how does it fit with the mission? How does it create long-term value? What happens if I don't do that? What are my alternatives? What's the time horizon? First cash out the door, and then when do I start getting the return of cash? Is it how it contributed to operations and so on? So if you're doing outreach someplace between now and the end of the year when we write this thing, having a discussion with one or two big companies about the nitty-gritty of the big-time capital budgeting, I think that will track the way companies think about exactly the stuff. The issue is it's not they don't think about it, it's they don't necessarily want to publicly talk about it, and there's a difference in here. So just a suggestion to tack on to what otherwise is still a lot of work to be done on this.
Okay, thank you. Now, I don't think we needed a formal vote on question three. It was rather comments and input. Is that correct, Julia?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, now I'm looking to the staff for guidance now. So do you want to start the next paper now? We were scheduled to stop at 12 and 15 minutes, but do you want to move on now to the next paper? Or do you want to have a break for, say, 45 minutes and then start?
It might be better to have a break if it is an option, because otherwise we just get through the tea up and not discuss much. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if the board's okay with that, can we break now and then start again at, is 45 minutes enough? So starting again at 12:30? Nobody's screaming at me? Everybody looks compliant?
Fine.
All right.
That's fine.
Okay. So reconvene at 12:30 London time. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.